Hello and welcome to the Cyber Consulting Room, the podcast that delves deep into the world of cybersecurity and its many facets. In this episode, we're joined by a very special guest, Edward Farrell, the Director and Principal Consultant from Mercury Information Security Services, based in Sydney, Australia. With nearly 20 years of experience in the field of cybersecurity, Edward is an expert in his field, and we're thrilled to have him on the show today. During our conversation, we'll be exploring Edward's background in cybersecurity consulting, his insights into the industry, and the lessons he's learned along the way. So sit back, relax, and join us as we dive into the fascinating world of cybersecurity with our guest, Edward Farrell. Hi, I'm Gordon Draper, and I'm here to talk with Edward Farrell as part of the Security Podcast. Edward Farrell is a security consultant with 12 years' experience in cybersecurity and 17 years in technology. As the director of an independent cybersecurity practice, he has conducted or overseen the delivery of over 700 security assessment activities and incident responses in the past 7 years. His professional highlights include lecturing at the Australian Defence Force Academy, being rated in the top 200 bug bounty hunters in 2015, and running an awesome team of security professionals. Hi, Ed. How are you doing today?
Not too bad, Gordon. It's been an interesting weekend here at CrikeyCon, and it's good to be getting home. Also, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, it's been good. It's been a good weekend, but I think that's a conversation we can have a little bit later as how awesome it's been.
So we've been here. We're in Brisbane Airport at the moment, just catching up after the weekend of CrikeyCon 2022. So one of the things I wanted to discuss was just a bit of an interview. So how did you get into cybersecurity / information security?
So I got into cybersecurity when it was information security, and cyber meant something completely different. So I got into it in about 2009. I was working as a network engineer at ANOC. I had my ground level competencies there. Actually, if I come back even further, I'd probably say about 2006, 2007, I started that transformation into security. I set my SSCP certification and also took the security lead at the NOC I was working in. And then over time, that evolved into more of a dedicated security role. Security was very much a niche specialist art. There weren't too many people playing in it, and there wasn't too much in the way of work. And I guess in some ways that still feels like a bit of a case, but in a lot of other ways, you know, there's a lot more opportunity out there that has evolved, which is great to see that we've had that industry build out.
Yeah, it's definitely grown a lot over the last 10 years or so, 20 years even. It's been come from the early 2000s where it was literally a backwater of someone would end up getting the position in cybersecurity and wouldn't necessarily be the major highlight of their career. It would just attract a different type of person than we'd get now.
I also think the body of knowledge was quite different in the approach, and I think that's evolved with the technology, the geopolitics, and what is happening with the world. So, you know, I think it was curious at CrikeyCon this weekend. You know, we had, 700, 800 people? This is a moderately sized conference here in Australia. I mean, besides Canberra, has about 2,200. I'd contrast that with when we had the one and only conference, which was RuxCon in Sydney. My first RuxCon was in 2008, and I think we had about 200 people there, and we all fitted into the bar at UTS. It was a very different time and a different place.
So did you always want to be in information security?
No, I didn't actually. In high school, I thought I was going to be a programmer. I graduated high school 2003. Factor in the dot-com burst. I went to university. I then started looking at, hey, where am I going to go? My subjects in programming were terrible at university. And I think that was a big thing that said, no, I'm not going to do programming because the way programming is being presented is here's requirements doc, build requirements doc. Please do not employ any creativity and we'll pay you $40,000 a year. And that was how it was presented. But then there was curiosity that started to come out of computer networking. And it's like, okay, well, computer networking looks interesting. Let's have a look at this as a prospective career path. It was great. I got my first job in a NOC. Actually, I was technically on help desk in 2005 as a summer intern, earning about $12.50 an hour. Then they brought me back part-time as a network engineer, my last 2 years of a four-year degree. And then I built out my security competencies. Then we had the GFC, so I still had to kind of hang around, but then I got a fabulous job with StratSec, which then became BAE Systems. I then moved to another firm called Hack Labs for a few months before starting out on my own. So in answer to your question of, did I always want to be in cybersecurity? Not quite. I think it was a natural discovery process. And I think for a lot of the people that are looking at this or getting curious about it, you know, I think it's going to be very much one of those cases of you'll make those determinations as you go through and or you'll just hate it like I did with programming. I mean, programming certainly has changed. And if I had my time again, I'd probably be interested in actually going down a programmer's path. But yeah, it
my undergrad was in 2002, learning Java in object-oriented programming. It's definitely changed compared to now, where it's there's still Java being written in enterprise Java, but the popularity of the language is starting to wane.
It's funny, right? You also saw that with Pascal, that some of us were actually getting taught at several points. It's just like, we're never going to use this language. Why bother? But then you'd contrast that with some of the computer science degrees that are focusing on legacy systems that are guaranteeing massive salaries afterwards.
So speaking of education qualifications and industry certifications, what sort of areas do you have with regards to that?
So my undergrad from Wollongong, which is in communications technology, I also have a CISSP, an SSCP, a CREST CRT, and a CISA from ISACA. Outside of that, I also have a bunch of surf lifesaving qualifications, including first aid and jet skis. If you see my my photo that I like dropping on profiles when it comes to speaking engagements, I also have a Cert 4 in training and assessment, and I have just been undertaking my graduate AICD director's course.
So very good.
That's a mix of training and education over the last 20-odd years.
On that topic, you're teaching a course at Australian Defence Force Academy.
That's correct. So there's another line of education I have. I've also spent 14 years in the Army Reserve, and so I've also got a series of qualifications out of there. But funnily enough, my career there as an industry fellow at the Academy had actually really just stemmed off some of the courses that they had originally had that then evolved into me supporting the postgraduate program, which has been really insightful both for myself but also then working along and collaborating with students on some of their activities at a postgrad level has been really cool as well.
I'm sure you get challenged by the students in different areas as well.
Yeah, I guess in two ways about that. Some of them are incredibly smart and will challenge assumptions or even academic observations in our course material, and it's great. I also find with some curiosity that we're also getting a lot of people that haven't come in from a technical discipline. So there's a massive uplift that we need to deliver there, and that's brought its own challenges. I've had students turn up to my course and it's their first day of using Linux. There's a steep learning curve that we need to manage with these new entrants.
When I went back to do my master's in IT security, there was the, I already knew about Linux, but there was the, here's Kali. This is what it looks like. How to use Kali in pen testing, etc. And that's its own learning curve as well. What challenges do you come across in the hiring of the right consultant for the right position? You run a cybersecurity consultancy, information security consultancy, growing, and you're regularly hiring new consultants to join your team.
Mm-hmm.
What challenges do you come across?
Interesting question. Bit of background, we currently have about 10 employees and 10 subcontractors working for us. The biggest one is actually cultural fit. If you're still in a small company and a small team, whoever comes in needs to actually be able to complement the business, but they also need to provide some sort of new insights or some sort of new approach. You know, I don't need clones of everyone. I need someone that can offset a particular need that we have in the business. So one of our new hires is leading customer relationship management. They have come from an existing pen testing organization, but they have commented that some of the unique and bespoke approaches that we apply are drastically different. So they're sufficiently offset insofar that they're going to be effective at helping us build business. You know, they also recognize their own shortcomings in terms of what they know, and they're in a position to build on it, which kind of leads to the second point I have in terms of challenges is the desire and the capacity to learn, but also operate in an empathetic environment. And that, I think, is another particular one is you'll often have people that will come into the business that just they don't understand that this isn't about technology or elitism. This is a team sport. And if you're not here to play in a team, you're not going to have a very long career. And that also comes to a third part, which really comes down to trust. We're having a lot of trust put in us, and we've built that trust over many years. If you're a consultant coming into the space, are you in a place to actually help us sustain that trustworthy relationship with our customers?
Definitely. That's one of the key values of what I've been working with Cybermarket is making sure that there's trustworthiness associated with consultants. And as I'm seeing across a lot of different consultancies, the trust is of the consultant is paramount. Bit of a generic question, but did you spend any time as a security consultant yourself before you went and started your own consultancy?
I did. I was with, as I said, Strathsec for a while. I then also spent some time working for HackLabs. HackLabs was going in a very different direction to where I was going, so I did look at going out on my own. And that's just meant I've been able to give my own unique brand and stamp to what it is we do and how we do it. But yeah, that's all been in Australia.
And you've all been in Australia? Okay. What is one of your most memorable experiences of consulting in information security?
So there was the Eternal Blue meltdown in May of 2017 and just working out what the hell had been happening with a couple of customers. The same was with WannaCry as well and doing discovery of that in April 2014. There were also some major projects I was working on back at Stratsec as well that were incredibly insightful and I think contributed to building me out as an individual, which was great. And even before that, I did have a really cool one where we may have found a remote code execution bug in one of the first software as a service platforms. This is going back into hallowed antiquity. So I wouldn't say there's one particular memorable experience. I think there's a lot of memories that stitch together that build out and consolidate over time that have made for a really great experience and a great career.
So would you ever consult again, but at a higher level, for example, as a virtual CISO or run your own consultancy, but you already are? So I think that that question answers itself.
It does. I think the comment that you have about running as a virtual CISO or a higher level person, I disagree with that as a role. Ideally, those roles should already be in place in a lot of the organizations. You know, it kind of comes back to working out your costs and your place. I think right now in the world, because we just don't have those people equipped and built and ready to go, it makes sense that people are outsourcing that role. But I think wouldn't say that jumping up into higher level consulting gigs at the board level makes sense.
There's not necessarily an immediate leap between consultant and virtual CISO, but there's a roundness that you get when you cover a number of different areas, including the risk and incident response.
Yes, and you know, look, I think I have my own opinions about the idea of CISOs, and it's a case of are they genuinely necessary in a lot of the environments that we often encounter. I think there's businesses where there's genuine value with having an SME operating in that space, whereas others, there's other existing roles that can fulfill that capability. So your CIO, your head of risk and audit, and most of them already have a really strong discipline that's already grown over the last couple of decades. I guess I'm reluctant with the idea of CISOs and virtual CISOs, you know, based purely on needs, but also I think the virtual experience, other roles and capacities that we've already got that can fulfill that. And, you know, it can be a bit of a controversy, I guess, but I think there's other avenues that I think we need to be considering before we go, oh, we're going to use a virtual CISO. So, yeah.
There's a lot of small to medium businesses that don't even have a security expert. So it really is just a, they've barely got an IT person kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think it comes back to we can also find ourselves encumbering businesses by having a virtual CISO. It's identifying the legitimate business need for that. And I'd even say that's actually a job in and of itself is our job should be to actually make our job redundant. So, you know, are we doing the world a service by creating a lot of work that we don't necessarily need?
That's a very good question. My next question is, what have you seen or heard at the conferences recently that stand out? So we've just been at CrikeyCon, is it?
Yep.
And a couple of weeks ago, we were in Las Vegas for B-Sides Las Vegas and DEF CON.
Yeah, actually, there was a really good talk that sits in my mind from Wednesday morning at B-Sides in Vegas. I can't remember for the life of me. It was the first talk on Wednesday morning, but the speaker, like some of the key points that I took away from it was we're probably starting to, as I said, we're doing a lot of technical activities, but we're not applying effective operations and strategy. And for me, there is a disconnect. I think for me, our engineers are trying to over-engineer our solutions and are in fact creating more unnecessary complexity when there's probably a simple activity. I think some of our strategists as well, because this is like the problem they had with the US Civil War. Suddenly they invented machine guns and no one knew how to deal with the mechanization of warfare to a point that it caused so much carnage and chaos. No one knew what the actual fix was.
It took a bit of time to change as well.
Yeah, and you know the same can be said for you know when we've introduced manufacturing processes as we saw during the Industrial Revolution, and even the same is being said about the Information Revolution. You know, new concepts and ideas getting introduced, and yet so many businesses are still running off a Macross-enabled spreadsheet. And so if you can suddenly find operational efficiencies to drive a business harder and faster, you know, that's going to have its payoff. But I think we're often too afraid to because we don't know it or because we know what already works. And so coming back to your question of, you know, anything I heard at conferences that have really stood out, I think that particular talk, it should be online in the next few weeks. I'm going to probably watch it again three or four more times, but it was a really curious dive into
automation and business efficiencies.
So. Probably just more so operations and strategy in cybersecurity. I mean, the speaker did jump around in a few different domains a lot. Really good. Yeah, a couple of other ones were also quite good. I think Sick Code's talk at DEF CON was pretty epic. For those of you unaware, this is the gentleman that managed to install Doom on John Deere tractor, which is a bit of scientific hooliganism. But if you think about it, you know, we are, if you have a look at our food supply chains, we are 2 weeks away from starvation at any point in time. And if that can be targeted through targeted attacks on our agricultural infrastructure, I think it's a problem that we need to reconcile with. And I think, you know, some of our business models that make sense economically to, you know, places like John Deere, for how we operate our supply chain. They make sense economically for John Deere, but they don't make sense from a national security standpoint if it becomes a targeted, you know, a targetable vulnerability that can seize our entire food production. So that's a big fear that I have.
I never really thought about it, having internet-connected tractors. I was thinking mainly more about the right to repair and the restrictions associated with the DMCA of code inside tractors.
Yeah, but that's a part of it, right? You know, that right to repair and that capacity to fix things should have at its foundation the survival of the human race. You know, we cannot, and COVID's demonstrated this, we cannot simply rely on being able to get a Amazon order of something out and hoping and praying that that's going to work. There is every likelihood that at some point in the next 10 years, if we have another conflict, whether it's in the Asia-Pacific region or in Europe, there's every likelihood that it's going to result in an impact on supply chain. We need to actually have resilience in our technologies around that supply chain.
So just changing the topic up a little bit, I don't think I've seen any internet-connected tractors as part of hacker movies, but what's the last hacker or cybersecurity movie that you've seen?
There was a particularly half-decent series on, I believe it was on Stan, what was it, The Undeclared War? That looked interesting. I think the imagery and the themes they had were really effective in sort of communicating to the layman what it is we did and some alternate thought processes. There was another, in fact, to be honest, I've actually been getting more into books and literature just because I think we can go into greater depth than a lot of our hacker movies. Couple of good ones I've read recently, QAnon and On by an author from The Guardian, Van Barden, where she has actually done a really detailed research at cults, QAnon in the Australian scene.
Oh, in the Australian scene, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
The weaponization of everything was another good one I'd read, but there was also, apologies, I'm just going back through my list here, so Return to Marco Polo's what I think was a good one around the sociology of mindset, like war, the hacker in the state. And also John Burningham, as an Australian author, did a really good series of books that hypothesised what would happen to the US if there was an attack on its digital infrastructure at a state level and how that could actually lead to a failure.
How old is that?
It's probably only about probably 2 years old.
All right.
Really, really good.
Quality analysis.
Wouldn't call it an analysis. I would say it's more of a hypothesis of here is a story of how this would pan out. So, you know, if you're into your zombie apocalypse style literature, he does a really good visualization of what that would look like.
You've mostly been based in Australia with information security and consulting. Is there anywhere in else in the world that you would consider moving to, or where else in the world would you live?
Where else in the world would I live? I would be interested in getting a yacht and sailing around the world for 10 years. I think that capacity to keep moving, but also to be self-contained in your own ship and be the master of your world, I think would be what would be really cool for me. But I'm still many years off that.
Yeah, sounds like a retirement plan. That may only be a few years away.
No, whenever retiring. We've got too much work to do.
Exactly. But that's always going to be there, given the current state of affairs. What's one thing in your consulting history that the consultancy that you worked for did that you didn't expect? And what did you learn from it?
It's very spicy, and I think there'll be points where I really have to bite my tongue on things that I didn't expect. I guess one of the curious ones I can talk about with my own company was actually when we went fully remote. I was afraid that when COVID hit, we wouldn't last 3 months.
Oh, really?
But funnily enough, going full remote, we were fine. And in fact, I even remember from an efficiency standpoint, we had increased productivity. And one of my staff members commented on it quite well, where he said, you know, I'm not on public transport for 45 minutes to an hour each day, and I'm also not exhausting my mind or, you know, feeling overwhelmed because I'm having to interact with it. Yeah. So that was really, really insightful.
I noticed the same kind of thing. The productivity generally went up, and it saved time on commuting, and I could definitely get a lot more done focused. What would you say that the most common myth about the cybersecurity consulting industry is?
I would say it's the illusion that you have to know and that you have to know everything. Something that a lot of people don't get over with consulting is there is a belief that they have to be confident and cocky. And that results in two problems. It means that our best and brightest are actually afraid to enter, but it also means that we get walking textbook cases of the Dunning-Kruger effect, where you have people that, after watching 16 hours of TED Talks, are suddenly cybersecurity thought leaders. At face value, we have this illusion that you have to be smart, and so some people will fake it till they make it, or worse. And the problem with that is it means that we do get a lot of very dangerous bullshit artists. We neglect our best and brightest as a result. So I guess if you're looking at getting into this industry and you're afraid you don't know everything, you know, there's people that are far worse than that right now. Most of them used to be flogging cryptocurrency. Now they're all cybersecurity thought leaders.
Just wait until the business coaches to step up.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be fun. So, yeah, it's kind of almost a two-phase myth of we lose our best and brightest who are too afraid to get into consulting, but we also get the worst of humanity that suddenly start becoming consultants, and it doesn't help us.
Definitely. I think that's a very good one, because a lot of people think, that especially coming out of university, that the only way to get a job in cybersecurity is by hacking all the things, doing hack-the-box challenges, and the only path is the pen tester. That's a grain of sand in the scheme of things.
Well, yeah, it's the initial point. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done in terms of integration and configuring organisations. There's also a lot to be done in security operations. Even incident response, I think, is another big one that people step into, but it's also, I mean, I remember dealing with one person who was an incident response expert, and all they were doing was just working at the board level. There was no capacity to actually deal with what was happening on the ground.
Hands on keyboard.
Yeah. And I think that can be quite disingenuous and quite dangerous, is when you get somebody who thinks, oh, I just need to operate at a board level. Well, you at least need to have an appreciation of what's happening one level down. And there's a lot of people that will suddenly become board level experts, and we don't have the barrier to entry in that space of someone being a notional expert.
The difference that you get between, I've done some work as both pen tester and also GRC consultant, the risk side of things, people that come from the risk perspective just assume that you can write things off with a risk acceptance. And from a pen tester experience, I know that what I can do, I can have some impact. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Definitely.
You're going to be jumping on a plane fairly shortly, so we need to start wrapping up. What is one piece of advice you give to someone starting out in cybersecurity?
Be curious. Understand what is happening and why. Don't be subjective. Don't think you're here to save the world. And definitely don't think you're here to dominate another human being. If you take a very objective, rational view, you are going to set yourself up for success.
Excellent. So where can the listeners find you online?
So you'll probably find me floating around the SecTalks channel or the B-Sides channels or somewhere on Slack. You'll also see me on LinkedIn as Ed Farrell. That's probably the easiest place to connect to me.
Awesome. Well, I just want to really thank you very much for your time and allow me to pick your brain.
No, no worries, Gordon. Thanks for having me.
And that concludes our conversation with Edward Farrell, Director and Principal Consultant of Mercury Information Security Services. I want to extend a heartfelt thank you to Edward for sharing his invaluable insights and expertise with us today. If you're looking for advice on cybersecurity consulting, or if you're a new consultant looking to navigate your way through the industry, I highly recommend reaching out to Edward and his team at Mercury Information Security Services. They're a wealth of knowledge and experience, and I'm sure they'll be able to provide you with the guidance you need. Thanks again for listening to the Cyber Consulting Room, and be sure to tune in next time for more fascinating discussions on all things cybersecurity.